This is a Collider.com audio interview.
It will prevent me from falling over from exhaustion.
We're working up quite hard.
Yep.
So,
no, just the hours.
So, the number one question is why not create this? Why not do this yourself?
That's your number one question?
All right, I mean, the number one question.
No, I just want to clarify that's the number one question for you, but that's not the number one question. So, there's multiple reasons. Not sure these are in the right priority, but after 30 years, I don't want to compete with myself. And other issues are technically, I am not on the level of Joe Kaczynski. And third is that Joe has a network of people that he works with Sean, and if I brought my network in, it would be a little bit like one of those Clint Eastwood movies where all the old guys go to space. And that's a different movie. So fourth, it's a generational thing, which is that it's almost as if Tron was waiting for you guys who were 10 when you saw Tron 1 to be 40 and have a 10-year-old kid that you could take to Tron and say, this is what blew my mind, and now I'm going to have it blow your mind. And in a weird sort of way, this is the right time to make Tron for that. Also, the generation in between the Gen Xers and those and their kids is now the age of Garrett and my son Carl, and those people are in their early 20s, and it's the right time for them to see Tron. And then there's this strange symmetry about Jeff being my age and my son being Garrett's age, where my actual life is lining up with the generations in the story of the film. And then there's probably something about the zodiac and the astrological signs lining up.
Well, speaking of generational changes, there's been also an aesthetic change, it seems like, from your original Tron.
Very much so.
Can you sort of talk about some of those
changes? Oh, yeah, that's a good one, because when my generation was thinking about cyberspace, it was, you know, the pioneers. It was like, somewhere on the other side of these Rockies is a wonderful land. And sure, there are problems, but, you know, we were idealistic. We didn't have to worry about the reality. We just, if we could just kill the big bad MCP IBM machine, then the, you know, the Woodstock vibe would take over everything and all would be right. And that was actually sort of true, because, you know, Bill Gates, a la Tron, got his disk into the heart of IBM, which was the mainframe, which was MCP, and that liberated the PC. So the story of Tron sort of actually came true. So one of the reporters yesterday asked me, well, you know, who benefited from all of this the most? And I said, it was Bill Gates, you know. And then, so there was this idealism that we had, that we were, and, you know, Stephen Jobs was the personification of that. You know, we're all going to have PCs, and then we'll all be super cool. And so that has totally changed. In the years since, in the generational shift, your generation has the difficult job of trying to figure out how to live and have a life with this technology as it turned out in their own lives. You know, just like, okay, it was great that you guys got the wagon train here, but it turns out living here is not that easy. And so you guys have to, instead of one big breakthrough, you guys have to do a million little breakthroughs. It's like, this is, you know, my iPod, this is my cell phone, this is my, you know, network situation. It's a completely different set of challenges. So that is also reflected in the visuals. The amount of reality in the film is, as Joe's doing it, is pretty intense.
Yeah,
And from a story standpoint, it's different too. So, go ahead.
I was just saying, having created this world so many years ago, and now it's sort of taking this evolution, how hard is it to let go from what you've done before?
I let go of it in the way that I just described. I think of it as a natural progression, you know, the seasons, the four phases of this world. And it's almost like cyberspace being what it is, it becomes a Rorschach to whichever generation has to deal with it. And it's sort of, you know, Disney was into that whole thing originally of making films that would cycle back the next generation. You know, they had that whole plan that the films would be released 7 or 10 years apart for the next generation, and ideas that they were going to redo Fantasia. And plus, I dig this role of being the Obi-Wan or the Yoda on this film more than being the guy in the trenches. I mean, I can't do what Joe's doing. I cannot work 16 hours a day staring at 25 monitors for most of that time. I can't do it. Physically. He can't. God bless him.
Is your role in this film is your role in the film limited to something on camera, or are you serving as a sort of...
No, I'm one of the producers, and they trust me to be the guy to bounce stuff off of. And we have a great relationship that way. It's like they go forward and I say, you know, watch out for that pitfall. If you're going to go that way, you might run into problems here or there. And also, I serve a function in terms of trying to inspire them with certain aspects. And it's interesting for me to see how, you know, they get it, but then they personalize it in their own way. It goes through a filter. They don't do what I, you know, it's not literal. But it's thought out how they say, oh, Steve's thinking about something here, and we get it. But then it goes through that same generational shift. It's pretty cool.
When they approached you to do this, what was your first, like, reaction?
When I started talking to Disney about the sequel, was 10 years ago. My son was 14 years old. He was here yesterday. He's been working in a sort of advisory capacity on Tron since he was 14. And our executive has gone from brown hair to all gray. Okay? I've been through many changes in the studio, and so has the project. And it gets tricky because, you know, 10 years ago, search engines were one thing, and now they're something else. So it's sort of a moving target that you're trying to hit. But thank Walt. I mean, Disney has given these guys their full support, and it's been amazing to see how into it they are.
So can you tell us a little bit about your character, a little more than just the Obi-Wan?
The character in the film or the character in real life?
Both.
So I'm a bartender at this place, End of the Line Club, and that's just Joe and Sean having fun with me, I think. But I have a certain confrontation with Flynn in this club. I end up having to face my own creation. It's all subtext. It's not like I have a scene or anything like that, but it's pretty cool. I'm digging it. It's good. On the film again, you know, I'm the father-in-law, the grandfather who sits in the back seat and says, "Why are you taking this exit? It's much quicker if you go the other way." That's what I do.
And what color is your suit?
Oh, it's white, and I have a vest, and it's illuminated. I have the coolest thing are these glowing cufflinks that I have, which I came up with that. So there you go.
So the original Tron came out in this period of Disney where there's a lot of kind of weird stuff that came out of Disney then. And some of it's gone to become cult. Tron has become sort of the cult thing from that period.
Mm-hmm.
Why has Tron continued to resonate? Why has it kept, especially when kids today, they want the next new thing, and Tron in a lot of ways is very quaint. Why does it still resonate with
The simple answer to that is it was so incredibly far out. And the problem we had was no one could handle that the cutting edge was coming from Disney Studios. Disney at the time was all about these, you know what it was about. And when the film came out, if you were older than a certain age, you didn't get it. And you just thought Disney was trying to get hip, but they couldn't ever really be hip. And kids who were 10 and 15 were like, wow. And they weren't into the whole politics of which studio was releasing which film and, you know, what baggage Disney was carrying at the time. And the fact is, it did sort of, for a generation, define cyberspace. It was the view of from the Rocky Mountains looking towards the Pacific Coast. And it imprinted, you know, and we now have sort of a nostalgia for a time when cyberspace was so full of potential and not so full of spam and porn. And, you know, that doesn't go away.
Was Disney trying to think of this? Because there was the black hole, there was Tron, there was a black cauldron. It was sort of a...
Will Hite, who greenlit the project, was trying... They were so determined... He was so determined to change their image that it was me who was saying things like, oh, I'm going to put this cute little bit in there, it'll be funny, and that'll be a good thing. And the studio, that aspect of the studio was like, don't make it too cute now, you know, because this is the one where we're going to roll it out and go the other way. So, and the other reason it resonates is because it actually came true. You know, it came true. I mean, Jeff Bridges goes into the scan trailer, gets scanned, and 20 minutes later, we see his low-res image on the game grid. And I say to people, do you get the irony of this, you know? And they go, what do you mean? And I say, well, we made that all up, you know? We just scanned a guy with a laser beam at Lawrence Livermore, and he ended up on the game grid. And it was like, you know, we were just going, and now it actually is exactly what happened in the film. And everybody goes, well, of course it goes that way. That's what was in Tron, you know?
I mean, when you were making Tron, did you feel like you were doing something, you know, like you were thinking far ahead in advance, or were you just being, having fun making a fantasy movie?
Yes and yes. Both of those. We knew we were pushing the limits. We were worried. We didn't know what the movie was going to be like, really. We had a vague idea. There were no video monitors. We got the first composited frame with color tests halfway through the live-action shooting. And I looked at it, and Richard Taylor said, we're going to burn the Naga hide off their couches with this. And the problem was that we thought it was going to be just visually too far out. You know, it was going to be like asking people to look at, dare I say it, 75 minutes of art. And that was like, ooh, we're going into a troubled land if we go that way.
What's the first thing that, you know, guys our age are going to notice that saw this in the original in the theaters? What's the first thing we're going to notice, the difference between the original and this one?
That it's 3D. I mean, we're doing this thing in 3D. And also that... It's going to be like we just res the whole thing up 1,000-fold.
So the world is that much bigger than...
No, the actual rendering on it, the feel of it, the texturing, it's just, it's it doesn't have that Pong Land vibe to it anymore, which was good and bad at the time. You know, it reflected the way cyberspace is. Now it's going to be like a modern day, you know, like contemporary plus in terms of how much resolution, the texturing, the feel, the style. It's very contemporary. Joe's really good with that stuff.
Up in the boardroom, they were talking about how your initial concepts had to be dumbed down a little because the technology wasn't there to do some of that stuff. Has any of that stuff made it into this film?
It wasn't... Well, it wasn't that they were dumbed down. It worked sort of to our advantage. It was like, you know, I was serving drinks at the bar last night, and the extras were there. And the one they were having a conversation to these people in front of me, and one girl had seen Tron, and the guy sitting next to her had never seen it, but he had read about it. And he said, oh, yeah, I read about it, you know. And they did the costumes differently than we're doing. And in the first film, they did the costumes, they put all the glow in by computer, he said. And, you know, people still think we put that stuff in with computers. So they don't get that there were 700 people with paintbrushes, you know, sitting there going, I think this looks like a computer made it. What do you think, you know? I mean, it worked. The first film was the bridge between analog and digital. There was a lot of black and white photography that was hand-tinted and hand-colored. Then it all went digital. And they were mixed, and you know, it's the actual, that chasm was crossed. This film, the analog is bye-bye. It's a digital realm for real.
Steve,
yeah.
Bad news, they need you in hair.
Oh, all right. You guys want to come to the hair trailer?
That would be amazing. We'll walk you to work.
Okay.
Sorry about that, guys.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I mean, I think you look amazing.
The